Oh, I just got to keep it. It's all right. It's all right now. It's all right. So, Nate, Jillian is here. Jillian, can you hear me? No? Can you hear me? Jillian.
Yes, I can hear you. Just
Nate.
Okay, go ahead. Seems like I'm muting people, but for some reason they can unmute it right back. Hold on, let me try it again. One moment.
Okay, right.
You have been muted. To unmute yourself, press the star key twice.
Okay, there we go. Let me find you. Let's see, Jill. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning.
I'll turn it over to Russ.
Okay, good morning. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning.
We do this days a week. So this morning we have Russ Johnson along with Jillian Green. So go ahead, Russ, and take the reins.
Okay, thank you very much. Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to
Nate's
program.
I think we've lost Russ. Can you hear me, Nate?
Yes, loud and
clear.
Yes,
I hear you. Wait a minute. Is Russ, is that yours, Bronx, New York? That's the only other person I see.
Mute off.
Okay, Russ, is that you at Bronx, New York?
It is him.
Can you hear me? Nate?
Yeah, your phone says Bronx, New York. That's why I was confused. Okay.
You can hear me, right? Is that right, Nate?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, Jillian, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, let's go then. All right, it's 12 noon, and here it is, Monday, March 13th, 2023, and we appreciate you being on the air with us today. We want to talk about some things dealing with aliens, UFOs, UAPs, the Pentagon, all the recent disclosures that have been happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this thing is real. UFOs are real. They're with us. The Pentagon says the UFOs are and aliens are here. And so we have put together a podcast called Lights in the Night, and we've been broadcasting for the last several weeks with other people talking about this on six different radio stations. So anyway, we're off and running in terms of looking at what's happening. Now, recently, the Pentagon, I don't know whether you saw this, Nate, the Pentagon saying that the mothership is above us. Did you see that, Jillian?
No, I didn't. Yes,
okay.
But I know what you're talking about.
Okay, so the Pentagon says in recent days that I don't have it in front of me, but the mothership is above us, and they're sending out smaller probes, if you will, to visit us. So let's go back in history a wee bit. We talked about probes, aliens, spaceships, UFOs, and all that. Jillian has a lot of information. I mean, just a ton of information on all of this. So, Jillian, bring us up to speed. One of the things I want to say is, no?
Yes, go on.
One of the things I just want to get started with is that when we talk about Roswell of 1947 and some other places all throughout the world, Brentwood and all that, could you just disclose the difference between the U.S. government's spacecraft that they have back engineered and they have their own, and the real deal coming from off planet? Can you tell us about that? There is a difference.
Oh, yes, there is absolutely a difference. Most of the ones that the government has access to or developed have been developed with some reverse engineering from Roswell and similar crashes around the world, but mostly in conjunction with the German Fourth Reich, actually, and under Antarctica, and the reptilians, who have been working for years now with the army branch of the Pentagon and helping our government to develop very advanced flying craft of all kinds. You know, the earliest ones that we saw was the stealth bomber. That was one of their developments, and it's gone on from there. So a very high percentage of the vehicles you actually see that are classified as UAPs or UFOs flying in our skies are actually from our government. But that doesn't take away from the fact that there are also a percentage of extraterrestrial vehicles. And they are declaring now that, as far as I understood the Pentagon release, that there is one mother craft orbiting our planet. Well, they know that's not true. Certainly to my knowledge, for the last 40 years at least, probably since World War II, there have been at least 9 of those, what they call mother craft, the major space-going ships that do not come down into the atmosphere, that stay out in space, and that release smaller craft or probes down onto the surface for their various reasons. And I know for sure there have been at least 9 of those ever since I came to America, which is over 40 years ago. So I'm sure the Pentagon knows about them. In fact, I know the government knows about them. Absolutely, certainly, I know that, that the government is well aware and is in contact with most of them. So it's an illusion that the government doesn't know. They do. And they are just releasing the information a small piece at a time, saying that, well, they don't want to panic the public. But if they started at the beginning of the story and told the truth, the public wouldn't be panicked. Because for starters, we have a very high percentage of alien DNA in our genetic makeup anyway for thousands of years. Other planetary systems have been using Earth really as a rubbish dump. All their criminals and bad guys and people they didn't want, they ostracized them up to about, this was the practice, up to about maybe 10 or 20,000 years ago, it was the practice of many species to use this as a penal colony, and simply the prisoners that they had that they didn't want to deal with, they simply dropped them off on Earth and left them to fend for themselves. So for tens of, hundreds probably of thousands of years, certainly tens of thousands of years, we have had aliens mixing in with our DNA, joining groups of existing humans on the planet and mixing their DNA with our DNA. So we already have a percentage of alien in our bodies. We also, and we need to remember this, we also have a percentage of reptilian DNA. All the buccal mucosa in your mouth or the lining of your nose, all that slick, soft tissue that lines parts of the body. This is all reptilian from the earliest development of upright species on this planet, from our original beginnings as Earth humans, not as imports from other planets. So this history of Earth is well known. It's not a secret. Anybody can find it out if they go to the library or search the internet or wherever they want to look. Most people, their lives are too busy and they have careers which occupy their energy, their time, their learning period. And so they really don't have either the time or the inclination to research all this information. But it's not hidden. It's out there and anybody can find it, especially in this day and age with the internet. It's available for all of us. So the UFOs that they are disclosing from the government now are just the tip of the iceberg. And I actually have seen myself one of the big ships that was damaged. I don't know how it got damaged, whether it got a meteorite strike or what, but it was sinking, absolutely sinking towards the planet, which would have been a huge disaster. This is about when I lived in Michigan, so it's about 37, 38 years ago. And I'd actually been doing a class one evening in my home, talking to a group of people. And as they were leaving, the last 3 or 4 noticed something outside and they came running back to get me. And when I went out, it was winter time as well. This is kind of funny because there was snow on the ground. And when we looked up at the sky, it was one of those clear starlit winter nights. And here was this giant ship huge. I mean, huge. And it was slowly, slowly, almost imperceptibly sinking. And out of the top of it were all these little ships, whether they were manned or just drones, I have no idea, but there must have been a half a dozen of them came out of the top of the ship and were rushing down to one side of this huge ship and doing some work on it. You could see sparks, you could see all kinds of, and it was clear enough for us to sit there and watch it. And we actually brought the garden chairs out and sat in the snow for about 20 minutes watching this thing. And this house I had then was on a fairly main road, and the traffic going by, they were looking at us as if we're crazy because we're sitting out there in garden chairs and the snow, right? But they obviously did not see what we were seeing. It was an amazing sight. And eventually, after 20, 30 minutes, these little ships all went back inside, and then the big ship took off again. It rose up and disappeared. But it was down to well within our atmosphere, and was in serious danger of being a crash right on the village that I lived in. So it was an interesting experience to see that. And I can assure you that if people like me know about the existence of all these things, there is absolutely nothing that the military intelligence doesn't know about. The trouble has been that all the information about extraterrestrials, both the interaction, government interaction with them through the industrial military complex, and the presence, the physical presence of them, has been held secret by a group of the CIA. They were a small group who were privy to all the information about planet Earth's connection with the extraterrestrials and UFOs for the United States. And they would not and will not share this information with anybody. And it's only in recent times, when whistleblowers have come out and said, this was our experience, that they are finally having to let go of a little bit of their information, because this information gave them power. And as you know, in government circles, it's all about who has the power, has the control.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the Majestic 12. And let me give you a little history for the people who don't know. Gillian Green's husband, George Green, happened to have been here, and for 40, 50, maybe 60 years was doing an enormous amount of research on aliens. He was in the Air Force, and he discovered back in the 60s that the alien craft were here and they were real. I think, what was his job in the Air Force? Do you know? He was...
Yeah, he was a rocket specialist.
Okay.
He looked after rockets.
Okay, great.
Missiles.
And so... Right. And so he saw this, and you tell the story better than me. So generally, George saw, when he was in the 1960s, I believe it was, that he was in the Air Force, and he saw this dealing with rockets and having security clearances and all that, that he saw one on the base. You want to tell that story a little bit?
Oh, yes. When he was at Andrews Air Force Base, that's where they had taken one of the captured or collected round UFOs. And the Air Force, when he saw it, the Air Force told him that it was a Sikorsky craft of some kind, and that he shouldn't pay any attention to it. Well, being curious, he asked his friend, who was the base photographer. And the base photographer at that time showed him the photographs from the crash site, not only of the craft that they had taken, but of the two dead aliens that they found inside. And George actually had one of these photographs and would show it at lectures for years. But he was a young man then, and, 19, 20. And after he left the Air Force, of course, he went into business. But as time progressed and he had the time and opportunity to do it, he started investigating this kind of thing for himself. He did what most of us would do if we had the time and the money to do it. He started going all over the world to these different sites and looking not just at crash sites, but at also the mystical sites, you know, Machu Picchu and Tetacan and all these, the pyramids, all these sacred sites around the world, to really dig into the history of humanity. And I think it was a big surprise to him. But his main area of expertise then became what the government was doing, because he became, for a short period of time, a government insider. And when they offered him a top job and he realized what they were into, he said, no, thank you, and got out of it and made it his life's work then to start publishing the written material of all these whistleblowers that were coming out in the late 80s, through the 80s and 90s, when the whistleblowers started to come out with their admissions of, this had been my experience, this is what happened to me. George was the only publisher for a long time who would publish any of their material, because everybody was afraid of going to jail. But I will say that about George. He was quite fearless. He didn't care about the government at all. He went ahead and published several books for whistleblowers on various subjects, not just UFOs, but several other things as well. Disclosure, all about disclosure of what the government was up to at different times.
I was just going to say, as a matter of fact, that his website that's still up that he left us a couple of years ago, he crossed over. And if you go to nohoax.net, you'll see George Green, and you can see the books and the things that he left. Even Gillian Green has about three books there that, you know, if you want to order them, if you want to see what they are. One is called, Chalice of the Dove, Return of the Anunnaki, and then FT, was that the other one?
Oh, ETA.
ETA.
Violet Meditations, and
yeah, just, it's all on the website.
They're on there. Now, yeah, they're on Amazon.
They're on Amazon, too. Now, when you talk about the mothership, and I think you've been on the mothership. Have you been on the mothership? You've been abducted
yes.
a number of
times. Oh, yes.
Right. Okay.
I've gone.
Go right ahead.
I don't get abducted. I get taken. There's a difference.
Okay. There's a difference. Okay. Because you're part of the Anunnaki. So they take you
right.
and bring you up on the mother and give you the information. But how, may I ask, how large are the motherships? So.
Oh, well, they can be miles long, right?
Okay.
The one I describe in the book, ETA, by the way, is a science fiction story. It's just like made as a story. But the information in it is actually real. And the ship that I describe in there, I call it the Gila. And that is more than a mothership. It's a city ship. It's for transporting vast numbers of people, and that ship is almost 22 miles long. And
okay.
what those big ships are, the ones that I know about, right, they are like long, if you imagine a super long submarine, and then they have wings or pieces that attach on all the way down the sides, and each attachment will hold 500,000 people or 1,000,000 people or whatever. And these are huge interplanetary transport ships, massive. But your average mothership is probably going to be from 4 to 10 kilometers long and about maybe a kilometer wide. But a lot of them are circular as well. The ones that are in orbit around a planet, that stay in orbit, like the two that the Anunnaki have, two permanently on orbit around Earth. And those two, they are probably not more than a mile wide, but they are circular. A mile would be their diameter, right? Because they are the round style of ship. And this is a matter of fuel efficiency, really. you might call it fuel efficiency. In other words, it's simpler and cheaper to run the circular build of ship. It's more efficient. It's energetically more efficient to build those circular style ships. And those stay in orbit for years. They're just there for, well, those two have been up there for the last 400 or 500 years that I know about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, they can't come down because if they were to come down, they work on a kind of different kind of energy vortex. It would destroy the planet. Is that right? They can't land here.
No, that's not exactly true, right?
Okay,
The reason that the huge ships can't land is simply because they are not designed for in atmosphere. I know it sounds ridiculous because these ships travel between planets. I mean, they travel from here to Andromeda, the great big ones, the transport ships, but they are built in space and their framework is designed to exist in space. If they came down onto the planet, it would, they, maybe not this planet, I don't know the exact pressures, but they are not very pressure resistant in the sense of the, like we have so many pounds per square inch of pressure when you're on the Earth. They're not designed for that. It would damage them. It would not be good for them, right? The smaller round ships, they are designed for coming up and down to the planet. And those that are in orbit around our planet come down into the atmosphere, but they would not be likely to land because they need too big a space to land on. If they did come down all the way, it would most likely be into the ocean. And they do have undersea cities, underwater cities. There's been one under Lake Titicaca ever since the Anunnaki left the planet. So, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. So there are underwater cities, and those bigger ships will come down and go underwater. But no, they would, if they landed on the planet, they wouldn't blow the planet up. No, they might blow themselves up, but not the planet. But you're okay. Right about two different propulsion systems. They have beyond the speed of light propulsion system when they're traveling in deep space, and they have another system which is basically, as far as I understand it, like a nuclear-powered engine would be on the nuclear-powered engines on the ships for when they are within the solar system. So whenever they come in beyond Saturn into our solar system, and they come by Saturn, they change to these engines, basically engines. And that's why it takes them longer to get from Saturn to Earth than it takes them to get from Earth to Andromeda, because they are using a different kind of propulsion, a slower kind of propulsion system.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. They do have two systems.
Okay. That propulsion system they have, if we were to have it, because it's been back engineered, and the secret government, the cabal, has it, then that could revolutionize the planet in terms of the use of energy and fuel. We don't need fossil fuel when we have those kind of systems. And is that what Dr. Go ahead.
Except that, to the best of my knowledge, and obviously I don't know anything, because everything by any means, because there are lots of other species out there giving information and exchanges with the government that I know nothing about. So all I can say is about the Anunnaki interaction, which has been the longest with this planet. You might say they are the senior interactors with this planet because they develop the species. But as far as I know, there has never been any access to the government so far to the interstellar system of travel, the star travel, the speed beyond the speed of light. I do not believe that has been disclosed to the government. It's actually quite a simple system in concept, but how they actually do it is a mystery to me. I don't know how they do it, and I don't think they have disclosed that to anybody else either. So all the major spacefaring species do use similar systems. It's more you, when you bypass space, you don't so much travel through it as pass by it. It's like you ignore it, you close it up, right? It's like almost like a fan. It closes the space. And so what looks like a million miles is only actually three steps away. It's a system of to do with light. It's to do with the folding of the north-south polarity of light particles. Every light particle is flowing in one direction, from the source out to the rim. And every particle has a north-south polarity. And you actually fold it up. And what the method is, how you do that I do not know, but I know that's what you're doing in order to bypass space, to travel beyond the speed of light. And that knowledge has not, to the best of my knowledge, been made available to any government on this planet at this point.
Okay.
Now,
why?
I could be wrong. Just let me finish this. I could be wrong because the Russians have had the longest extraterrestrial contact on the planet. They have been interacting. They had what they called their secret city in Siberia, where they have been interacting with extraterrestrials in physical form down on the planet in Siberia for a very, very long time. And of course, I have no idea what has been disclosed to them. So with that caveat, as far as I know, no Earth government knows how to fly beyond the speed of light.
Okay. Well, the Germans did pretty good with their spaceships back in 1940.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess when most people don't even know what we're talking about. They said, what are they talking about? The Germans had spaceships in the 1930s, 1940s. Could you talk about that story? If they wanted to get that history, would you say Michael Sullivan?
Oh, Maria. If they want the whole story, they should read a book by Dr. Michael Sala called The History of Antarctica, because that lays out a lot of this information for them. But what that was that the Germans had was a woman called Maria Orsic, who was a psychically gifted lady. She had a small group of clairvoyants who worked with her, and they were being given information by the Pleiadians on how to build a rocket ship that would go to the moon, right? And she gave this information to Hitler, and Hitler used the information to build the rocket ships, the rocket bombs to bomb London with in World War II. But she also gave Hitler, through a group, an occult group called the Vril Society, which still exists today, that was composed mostly of scientists and engineers. And they designed spaceship type, except they're not really spaceships. They can't go out beyond our solar system. They can only travel in the environs of the planet, really. But these were used by and developed by Hitler in World War II. And when the war was coming to an end, he moved the whole production of them to Antarctica, to the cave system under Antarctica, because he'd also been contacted by the reptilian species, who are a master spacefaring species and have been coming to Earth for a long time. And they inhabit the cavern system under Antarctica, and they invited Hitler to go there, and that's where he moved all his industry and to Argentina, and from Argentina down under Antarctica. And they're still there today, and they are the ones who work with the government, the Pleiadians, the reptilians, and the Germans. They're all under Antarctica, and they are the ones who really have fully developed the military-industrial complex.
Okay, that Eisenhower was talking about when he resigned.
Yes.
I mean, not resigned, but when he left office. But anyway, it's so much history. And I guess we open up a bit other people with questions, because what we're talking about, we have studied, you have instructed me over the time, and I've talked to George many years ago when I used to interview him on radio and television back in 1952. Not only he, but Bob Exler, Wendell Phillips, and Stanton Friedman. But here's a clip of George Green when back in the day when I was talking with him.
Your physical reality that you have, based on this physical life that you have, this dream, is made up of the experiences that is impregnated on your body and in your mind, consciously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your soul memory is another thing. It goes back whatever time that you elected to be in this incarnation for whatever reason. Now, let's show you the division on these things. Since the body is very physical, and we just got you making a physical being in a few months for spare parts, they said, now we've got the perfect deal. How can we have that work better? Well, if you go to the hospital today and get an encephalogram, what's that? That's the memory of your conscious mind. It's on the CD. Let's download it on this being. Now we got a walking, talking duplicate that has the total memory that you have, because we just took it off of your own mind.
Okay, it's like Blade Runner, the android.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is that it's like this DVD recorder. Sometimes you have glitches in it, so you have to have them tuned up occasionally or redone them. And so we take them to Camp David, or there's a wing at Bethesda Hospital, to just tell you. If you go down there and check, you'll find the nurses, if they're willing to come forth, they'll tell you they work on those people, and they call them the others. I thought it was interesting.
Right, but I just want to play that because we talked about spaceships just a bit. I want to talk about people who are abducted, people who are walk-ins, people who don't have souls, EBEs. Could you talk about some of that for us so we can understand what's coming to this planet and how things are evolving? And many of us are not even educated to these facts and the hybrids and all that. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, George was talking about cloning there, the military cloning.
Right.
And they do this. They clone top officials, for example, so they have a duplicate of them, so they can put them in two different places at the same time. You know, while they go off to secret meetings with somebody, they are supposedly opening a bazaar somewhere else. So this cloning has gone on for a long time, and our government is pretty good at it, and the main base is Bethesda Hospital, where they keep them all. It's a terrible thing to do because these clones have awareness but no soul life, and they really are just bears. They have no rights whatsoever, right? Not as living beings. And, you know, we've seen lots of films about this kind of thing it's just not a good thing that the government is doing with cloning. However, there is another kind of cloning where they not only transfer your brain information, they also transfer your soul energy. And this is used by more than one extraterrestrial species as a means of basically prolonging life. You know, when it's time to die, you die and you just step into another body, and it's that easy. It takes about 3 days to stabilize you into the other body, because it takes 3 days for your soul energy to leave this physical form, or the form that you're in. So there's more than one kind of cloning. EBEs, they're just terrestrial biological entities. That's what it stands for. And they are not necessarily clones. They are people of an unidentified kind, right? I think they come from... the ones they classify as EBEs come from star system.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I read somewhere that these were soulless creatures. I don't know whether that's true or not. It may be. Certainly in our culture here on this planet, and I've heard this among I've read this among writings of American Indians. The American Indians recognize that there are people who are soulless, and they just call them non-people, and that you can meet them in your lifetime, that they are true biological entities, that they have no soul claiming them. And these are ordinary people who are living amongst us. We probably wouldn't recognize them as such, but a Native American Indian shaman, for example, can recognize them very easily. A clairvoyant can recognize them as well. And there are people, when someone becomes pregnant, a soul somewhere out there in the universe, a soul says, okay, I will take that body when it arrives. They are not with that body when it is conceived. They are not with that body for the first trimester of pregnancy. They have said, yes, I will take it if it arrives. But during the first trimester, there is always the risk of miscarriage and so on and so forth. And so the soul does not enter that body until what they used to call the quickening, until the infant starts moving in the womb, where that movement is the sign that the soul that is going to inhabit that body has actually moved in. It doesn't even stay in that infant, comes and it goes as it chooses, and it only moves in permanently when it's time for that infant to be born. So this idea that a body automatically has a soul from the moment of conception is entirely wrong. It's incorrect. It's not true, right? And it leads to a lot of misunderstandings, of course, especially with the medical profession and with spiritual beliefs and with things that churches teach. They are quite wrong in the idea that the soul and the body are conjoined from the moment of conception. That is not true, right?
Okay.
But nonetheless, there is a soul coming. So sometimes it happens that there is a pregnancy and no soul wants that body. No soul can be persuaded to take that body. But because conception, development of a fetus and childbirth are biological actions, obedient to the rules of nature continues, and you can have a child born with no soul.
Wow.
That is perfectly possible.
That's unbelievable. But people never heard, I suspect that most people listening never even heard of that as a possibility. You know that,
well,
there's a body to
be...
I'm sorry?
No, go on. I'm listening.
No. Okay, so an entity can be born without a soul. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, it can be a biological entity. Every one of us are biological entities. We are the result of impregnation following a natural process through development of a fetus to childbirth. And in addition, we have a soul that enters our body, right? It has to enter our body. It's not there as a result of sexual intercourse. It's not there as a result of conception. It's there as a result of leaving the realms of spirit and coming into a body.
Okay, my final question before I open it up, because I guess people think that even the people who study this stuff, it's a little bit beyond belief. That's a show, Beyond Belief by George Norrie. And you got Cosmic Connections and Gaia and all that. But let's do with this with George, and we'll open the lines up right after this. George is saying
existence
something
right now. Right. And what we're creating. And it's not only the we, it's everybody else that's involved in their thought processes that is being coalesced from the creation in order to try to figure a way to come back out of this with the least destruction to the soul energy.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And the soul has to wake up and say, wait a minute, there's something above me. See, the ego keeps you back down to the me, I, and all that kind of stuff. We're all together. I love you all.
Yeah.
We don't care. We're all one.
Okay.
Right.
You, Miss Jillian, Miss Green, have said that you have come in and out of many incarnations, and you're here now.
Yes.
And if you leave, yes, you're not coming back in a body. You're going to be a walk-in. Is that what I heard you say? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No. You never heard me say that.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
What I said was that when I come back, I will come in a different kind of body, a body made of different kind of tissue, different kind of material. That's what I said, because that's what's true.
Okay, but you say you have been in and out of this existence for thousands and thousands of years as being born, like we all have been born.
For 4,000 years. For the last 4,000 years.
Okay,
yes.
But you're not going to do that anymore. You will come back.
No. Yes.
You will come back one more time, at least one more time. But you will come back.
I'll land in your garden in my little spaceship, if you like.
Thanks a lot. Well, I just
in my little two-seater.
I would just be it. Let it be known that this is my first time around, so I'm just studying all of this. Let's open the lines. So it's a quarter of. Let's open the lines and let people ask various questions of people who's still with us. Maybe most people have gone away and said, I don't believe anything they say. So these people are nutcases and they've gone.
Right.
Okay. Nate.
Okay. We have Dora unmuted. Go ahead, Dora.
Jillian, good morning. I could not get in on the beginning, but when I did come in, I'm just really hyped and excited to hear your voice. I first want to say thanks and welcome back, and hope we hear from you even more. So I'm really interested. I got two things. I'm interested in the whole thing. I mean, this really sparks me, but I hope that I have someone else to jump on when I got on. I hope they didn't get freaked out, but maybe not, because I know that they've done so much reading, way more than I have, and probably more than reading. I'm sure they get a lot of messages. Maybe they don't understand them all. Maybe they do. Anyway, here's my first question. You were saying about the other entities who live among us. So I've been thinking that so much for these last 2 years. I went to, in 2021 of December, I left this country and went to the Emirates for 3 months. And the difference in the people, the first thing that blew my mind was, you know, that was right in the middle of COVID, so-called COVID. And all the homeless people, I live in Los Angeles, and I don't know if you know about this homeless situation, but because of the weather, because of whatever, it's just a whole community or communities all over of homeless people, all over Los Angeles County, Orange County. Those are the two counties that I'm in and out of a lot. And right here in my neighborhood, I live in a Jewish community. And I don't know why it's more over here and they're everywhere rather than being scattered. And I'm telling you, if I go, I'm a walker and I like to go walking. And when I pass those encampments while walking, it's like they don't see me. A lot of those people, they don't see me at all. And just last week I was driving through and somebody gave me a big bag of clothes because a senior passed on. And they said that you can fit these clothes. Well, they're really nice, but I couldn't wear them. But I saw someone that had at least six humongous different gatherings of items they were collecting, and they were all tied up in all these big black plastic bags on a push cart, however they had them. But they were just running down the street. And this one person, I stopped and said, I have a lot of bags in the back of my car. Would you want them? Maybe you can use them. And they didn't hear me, and they were right next to me, and I had to sit like three times. And the head turned like on a movie you'd see an alien. And he said, not right now, like that. And turned back like he never really, like he wasn't human. Well, I see a lot of people like that in those communities. So normally I would never stop. I would never see, because I, just like they respect us and they do their thing, I've been doing that too. That's the first comment. The second comment is saying about the embryos and the fetuses who don't connect right away. Well, I have four children, and during my pregnancies, I've been on a health walk. I've been on a spiritual walk, even at 21 when I got pregnant with the second one. I was in this awareness back then, and the juicing and the yoga and the transcendental meditation. I was, you know, everybody thought I was the weirdest person ever.
I can't hear you anymore.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. So anyway, I paid a lot of attention to the pregnancy situation. And it's almost like if you do pay close attention to your body, you can feel when that embryo starts moving and when they're
right.
They can react to your voice. And
yes.
Other voices that may come into play while you're pregnant, they react a different way. And so I used to read to this, my oldest daughter, I would read to her and talk to her and laugh with her, and that baby would react, and I know she would. Well, today she's, well up in age. I'm a senior, so I was in my 20s when she was born, early 20s. She's very different. She's a different kind of human being, and she's very special. I don't even know if she knows how special. I know she knows, but I don't know if she knows what we know. And it's not comfortable to explain that. I'm going to be quiet now. But it's hard to let people in the family know when you know.
Yes.
Okay,
and this is true for 99.999% of all pregnancies, when the mother feels the baby moving, and sometimes it's just like a feather fluttering, right? But when they feel that, that is the soul taking, claiming that body. And that is the case for most people. Very rarely, very, very rarely, you get a pregnancy where there is little or no movement at all, and this can happen, unfortunately.
Okay, we have a couple other people unmuted. We have Edward Mann. Go ahead, Edward.
How's everybody doing this morning? Or actually, it's afternoon by where you are. Okay, my personal experiences in the subject matter that's been discussed all morning, which was extremely intriguing. Back in 1981, I met Paul Shepard and started buying Dr. Hill's Light Force products. And Paul never drank, smoked, or anything. And then one day, he tells me he's been hired and the happiest guy I ever met. Tells me he's been hired by the UFO hotline to interview officials in all the cities in North and South America because there were sightings every day, and he was to interview public officials in all the different cities. Okay, so I already knew from a man that I had a personal relationship with that there was more than just a little something going on. Okay. So then in early 2000, well, in 1990s, the early 90s, I read this book called Secret Life by Dr. Jacobs. Man, that was probably one of the best books I ever could have read in my life. I've had other people tell me they read it, and they read many books about the subject, and they said that was the best one. Well, that was the only one I read, how they raise worker, they track women and put trackers up their nostrils, and they actually they have beds on these ships. Some of them are 20 to 200 beds, and they have tanks for the embryos, and they track the women until they're ready to give birth. They probe them, everybody on these tables, all of their orifices for whatever reasons, and basically they're cloning a worker race, and if they don't bring the women back on for tactile touch, those embryos that are in the tanks, if the mother doesn't hold it, they could die after they are born. Now, that's one part of it. In early 2000, when I studied at the International Institute of Oxygen Therapies up in Priest Lake, Idaho, by the Canadian border, one night, and it didn't get dark in July until 10:30 at night, it started to get dark, the sunset. And it rose at 3:30 in the morning. And I'm sitting in the couch, and it's late. It's dark out, right? So I'm relaxed, my computer probably on the table on my lap I'm looking at. And I hear a voice call my name, come out here. So I struggled to get up out of that couch and walked out the door, and the porch light was off. It was pitch black out. You're talking about up in, there's no lights. And they strap one of these things on my head. They're called night vision goggles with one telescope coming out of it. And they're $6,800 a pair. This man, Ed Grimsley, came up there. This man, Ed Grimsley, came up there in order to be fixed because he was very sick. And so was his family. And Dr. Freebot was going to heal him. And he had three of them. And Dr. Freebot had a laser pointer, and he was pointing up at the sky. And I'm looking up, and we counted 115 of them crossing the night sky. Now, keep in mind, the closest airport was Washington. Oh, my God. 85 miles away. What the heck's the name of that city? Anyway, actually, there was a closer one with 10 little private planes, 10 miles away, little tiny planes with an airstrip made of grass and gravel, basically. So to see 115 of them in an hour and 10 minutes, as I was counting them, crisscrossing the skies way, way high up and making right and left turns and zooming across those high skies was phenomenal to me. To me, it was like, holy cow. And that was after I read the book, after Paul told me about this. So everybody went inside and I stayed out there. Well, the next night, I laid down on the lounge chair. It was a clear sky. Now, keep in mind, the trees were 50 feet high and more all around, but it was clear skies. So I could only see to a certain distance being in the center of a clearing of such high trees. But they all passed over my vision in the sky. Every night, none of them came out there. I did. And there was never a night that they were not visible with night vision goggles. So I told Ed Grimsley, why don't we get the night vision goggles wholesale and sell them to the rich guys instead of charging them $500 to witness this stuff? Start selling the goggles, you know, but whatever. Anyway, that was just a suggestion. And I know much more things, but I'll turn it back over. I believe I'm talked out on the subject a little bit. There's obviously more going on. And you guys, how intriguing your conversation was.
Well, thank you for the book, Secret Life by Dr. Jacobs. Thank you.
Right. Can I make a comment here?
Yes,
on what that
please.
Gentleman was talking about? I know, first of all, I live in northern Montana, so I know Priest Lake over in Idaho very well. I used to live in Idaho. And I think I know where he might have been seeing those craft from. A bit further west, right as you get to the Washington-Oregon border, there is a place called Eseti. That's E-C-E-T-I, capital letters, Eseti. Right, it stands for something. I forgot what. But there is a ranch there belonging to James Gilliland. And if you look up James Gilliland, you will find he has a website and he does a radio broadcast every week. And at his ranch, the ships come out of the mountain every night. He has Star Watch groups going there all the time. Anybody can get hold of him and go and pay a visit to the ranch. The sky is full of them. And it may have been the ships from there, because that's high up in, when they go high in the sky, from Priest Lake to Eseti. You're talking just a few hundred miles and would be very visible in a night sky. So
could be, but I don't think so. I believe I saw them. And they're so high up, and they travel across the heavens as if they're passing through the outer atmosphere and don't even come down to Earth. And that's serious. When I watched them every single night, I saw exactly.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And not only that, let me explain one thing further. I overheard an argument between Ed Grimsley and Dr. George Freebod, and the argument went something like this. I kept my mouth shut and just listened. So I'll play it back as best as I can, ad-libbing. The argument was about Dr. Freebot was telling me that they were completely benevolent. He was telling them benevolent, excuse me. And Ed Grimsley said they actually war with each other and fight in the skies. And George was arguing with him that's not what's happening. They were at a crossroads and could not come to an agreement at that point.
Oh, that is very interesting, because a lot of them are warring in space all the time. There have been for thousands of years. There's battles going on constantly. And now, actually, we ourselves, the U.S. government, through our Navy Space Force, we are involved in those battles as well. So what you're saying is very interesting. They must have been way out beyond our atmosphere that you were looking at. That's very interesting. But it still doesn't change the fact that there is a place called Eseti that people can go to and see ships with the night goggles. They can view them every evening if they wish to. So that's just a side comment to your story. But no, your man who said they were fighting may well have been very right that they do fight. There's battles going on and have been going on for a very, very long time.
Well, let me ask you this quick question. Since the battle with the Democratic, Republican, Independent Party, blacks against whites, whites against whomever, Indians, whatever, we have a lot of fighting on this planet. So it's not. So where do we get that DNA from? That ability to be aggressive, to be pugilistic, to be, you know, all the time.
It's inbuilt into every sentient species, and it's called the survival instinct. And it comes out of the lowest chakra, right? Your bottom chakras. That's where the energy is that houses the survival instinct. And it's built in every creature. Every living creature has a survival instinct. It will fight. When it's hungry, it will fight. When it's starving, and the more progressive it gets, the more sentient it becomes, as people are sentient, then they fight over things that they want. And the things that they want are power and control. So that's the biggest fight all the time. And it goes on among all species at all times. most species, probably half the species out there have evolved beyond that, have raised their consciousness and transcended the survival instinct to the I love everybody instinct, the unconditional love. In other words, the more spiritually evolved species are not into fighting and they don't involve in fighting. But
would you put Jesus, Krishna, would you put Jesus in that category, the last category? Krishna,
yes.
Buddha? Okay, all right.
Right, absolutely.
Nate, back to you.
Okay, yeah, we're actually at the top of the hour now, but we had one person unmuted that hadn't spoken, and that's Lavender. Go ahead, Lavender.
Okay, thank you for noticing, Nate. Jillian, I want to thank you for being here today. You're amongst family. There's many of us here that have been part of that UFO community for like 30 years, something, maybe longer, actually. And so we love you. I love listening to you. I connect to your spirit. Being part of the Anunnaki, I'm like my hands are in the air, girl. We love you. Thank you for being here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Lavender. I like the hands are in the air. Mine are usually waving about as well. I think I'm part Italian when I speak, even though I'm sitting here by myself and nobody can see me. I'm waving my hands about. So I love that. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have time, I have two short questions.
Sure. I have time.
Okay.
It's up to Nate.
You probably have the answer to this. Who was the man that owned the Spruce Goose that the government gave all control over, all alien shipbuilding and alien everything? What was his name? The billionaire that owned the Spruce Goose?
He's down in Texas.
Oh, you mean, yes, Spruce Goose.
Howard
Hughes. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Howard, yeah.
Howard Hughes was
yes.
given basically control and dominion over everything to do with anything alien technology, recovery of ships, and of course the Vatican kept it secret. They do not want this stuff out. It would mess up their religion stuff back then. And now, how about the man, I have it in my newsletter, that when he went down for the government and built underground duns in the United States and Europe, he went down to one of them and confronted an alien that was down there. There was a whole species underground, and shot one of them and got shot and was rescued. And the other 66 went underground and they were all killed. He got his life saved. And before he died, he gave testimony to everything. You got to hear it. Oh, my God. And he built the underground duns in Europe and here. Are you familiar with that man?
No. No, I'm not.
One more question. The man that's 96 years old when I discovered him that was writing his sixth book that told me about Howard Hughes. He had all that knowledge, who was in control of everything, and he was writing his sixth book at 96 years old. Are you familiar with him?
Not unless you're talking about Wendell Stevens, but I don't think he was that old.
Well, this is recently, so I think he's still alive. I didn't see that he passed. I'll dig you up that information, and I have it at my fingertips, so you make it available, because it's always nice to get more pieces to the puzzle. It's just very satisfying to educate ourselves.
I would be interested, very interested in what you're talking about the inside the earth, because I really know nothing about that. I mean,
they
I know there are underground bases and so on and so forth, but...
He built four cubic foot bases for the government. Four miles are each one of them. Over 140 of them in the United States and over 1,400 of them throughout.
Oh, you're talking about the underground bunkers.
There you go, but he ran into the aliens
that
were living underground for... hundreds and hundreds of years, if not thousands, they've been living underground.
Yes, yes, I do know about that. Yeah, I just didn't catch which way you were going. I do know about the underground bunkers. Yeah, I, in fact, I visited more than one of them.
I have a great video you can share with it with other people, and you'll appreciate it, I am certain.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the information. Thanks.
Thank you for sharing everything today. It was amazing what you talked about.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jillian. Thank you, Edward and Dora and Lavender, everyone that's chimed in today. I did see Niecy had unmuted, but she muted back, so I guess maybe we covered what she was going to bring up. So we will end the call for today and thank everybody for being here. We look forward to wait a minute, Niecy unmuted again. Go ahead, Niecy.
Well, one question, Ms. Jillian. When you spoke about the 3-day clone, if one is cloned and take that 3-day, do they come back? What entity, how do they come back?
Okay. I was talking then about a system that is used off this planet. Not used on this planet.
Okay. One other question, because all of this is new and different and like, wow, to me. You said souls and being born. I have 3 daughters, and they are just mini me, look like me, think like I do. Touch on that for me, please, for a sec.
That's simple genetics. You pass your genes along, and generally speaking, a child gets half the mother's genes and half the father's genes, and if they characteristics are stronger in the mother's genes, for example, the way you speak might be a very strong characteristic in the gene pool, and so the girls do the same thing. They sound the same as you. This is pure genetics. Nothing unusual about it. It's normal.
Okay. Well, thank you, ma'am.
Okay, then.
Hey, everyone.
Okay. All right. Well, we don't have any.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Nate. I've enjoyed it as usual, and I'm glad to be fit enough to be back. And I also, just before I go, I'd like to say thank you for the members of your group who were kind enough to send me good wishes when I was so sick in the winter. And Russell did pass them on to me. So, guys, I appreciated the concern. It's a pleasure. So thank you, Nate, for having me.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here. Like I said, we look forward to in the future further in this conversation. Possibly you can come back next week, maybe next Monday, if you are well enough and would like to, we welcome you to come back.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, we're well over time today. We always like to start on time. We like to end on time. So we will go on and finish the call today, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow. So everyone have a great day, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you again, Jillian. Thank you, Russell.
Okay, well, thank you. We appreciate it. I close with George.
And don't look for anybody out here to save you other than yourself. You know, even Christ said that. He said, what I do, you can do and greater, and what you sow, you shall reap.
John 14:12. Look it up. Have a good one. Talk to you later. Thank you very much for being here.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye now.
The organizer has ended this meeting. Goodbye.